I wanted to be in that position where you're going into a race as the man to beat. In order to win races, you have to train hard. And the easiest way to do that is to close down. Pressure I'm putting on myself is mainly from myself. I know what I have to do over the next 10 months in order to be competitive.
Well, Christian, thank you so much for making the time to join us for this face-to-face podcast. It's lovely to have you here and have the chance to chat to you and get to know you a little bit better. When I was thinking about your career and looking through like your list of achievements, it's like a kind of like a basically everything you'd want to win, more or less, you've won. Do you sometimes feel like kind of, yeah, I've conquered triathlon a little bit already?
I try to not think about the races that I've won. Like, of course, having the world title from short course and up to Ironman and also the Olympic gold is something I dreamed about as a kid. But then I think like when I first won the Olympics once, you also want to do it again. And so I try to not think too much about like the races I've done in the past, but more looking forward to the next challenge. I think that's also what has been a part of the reason for the success that I've been able to have in the back end of Tokyo. Like, I guess it's quite natural to sort of be happy and sort of settle down after winning a race like that. Well, I felt straight on. I wanted to go straight on to like taking the short distance title and then going on to Ironman, which was supposed to be in October then before it got postponed to May. And sort of, I always wanted to have like a new challenge straight after. And it's sort of the same now. Like, even though I've won all of those races in the past, I want to go into the next one for Paris.
What is it about that then? Is it the winning that's addictive?
The feeling, of course, crossing the finish line is fantastic. Like, and also in the moment when you realize you have the win in your pocket, and that can be maybe 500 meters or K away from the finish line when you sort of know that you have snapped the gap and you have the win basically secured. But that feeling can be fantastic, but also the fantastic feeling of feeling efficient, like in training where you just feel so strong, like almost like a machine in training, and everything feels easy and fast in the same time. So both of those, like both the training aspect of it and also the racing aspect.
I mean, it's fascinating to, I guess it's a champion's mindset, really, but to be able to win so much, but to still retain the hunger to win more. Like, do you ever wake up and think, ah, whatever? Or are you always like, no, there's one more big goal, the next big goal, the next one?
For me, it's always been like the next one. Like, to win races itself, of course, give me joy, but I feel racing poor races is giving me way more sort of pain or like discomfort than the joy of winning the race itself. So it's always like when I win a race, it's sort of okay, on to the next one. And if I do a poor race, it's staying on my mind for like weeks afterwards. So I think it's, of course, I love winning, but I guess losing is even worse.
Do you feel like you need those losses then to fuel fire to win?
That's what I'm trying to tell myself in the back end of a poor race, like trying to think, okay, at least it's good that it's hurting, because it means something for me. And if you just go away from a poor race and feeling okay with it, then it's an even longer way to get back to the top. So I think it's a good sign that it still hurts to lose.
I'm really keen to understand like where this motivation that you have in general, this drive you have, has come from. Can you talk a little bit about your childhood, your upbringing? I mean, the area you're from, I would imagine would be much more akin to people doing winter sports.
No. I'm from Bergen, so it rains 2/3 of the year. So it's
probably not a lot of snow.
It's not a lot of snow. So, but it's like good condition for endurance sport. Like it's, of course, it's a little bit like in the UK, it's wet, it's sort of not too warm, but it's great for endurance sport, and we have a lot of mountains around, and I feel quite early, I sort of started loving just doing sports. And it didn't have to be like swimming. Even though I did swimming and football, it wasn't just swimming and football. I enjoyed, like, I loved every sort of sport. Like, I bought myself a road bike, not because of I wanted to put swim, run, and bike together, but simply because I just wanted to start riding, and because it looked so cool on Tour de France on the TV. I guess that's why I ended up in triathlon in the end of it, because that's the place where you can do the most activities throughout the week.
Were you from a sporty family? Did your parents?
Not too sporty. Like, we did do a lot of like hikes and like going to the mountains in the weekend, but not like elite sport background in the family.
But were your parents really encouraging for you to be outside, to be active, to be kind of doing stuff?
Yeah, like, of course, like, you need supporting parents to help you to get to practice and sort of, yeah, being supportive. But I guess the inside drive and sort of the energy and sort of the need of being in, like doing sport has come, like, it's just like naturally for me. Like, I've always had a lot of energy and sort of needed one way or another to get the energy out. And for me, that's been sport has sort of got me there.
Was that a journey as when you were younger to kind of try and find the right outlet? Because a kid with tons of energy can sometimes, you know, direct it in all kinds of weird ways.
Difficult kids, yeah. Yeah, I think, I needed a way to get out the energy. And I think first swimming and then like football and like just being active and has been a great way to get the energy out. And it's been a good sort of medicine to, yeah, being able to get it out on the field and sort of relax outside.
Interesting with that you played obviously a lot of football, because I think one of the things that you have become, your name is synonymous with, is the guy who's very much kind of able to train on his own, able to just be this machine. You even used the word machine yourself earlier. But that football is obviously a team sport.
Yeah.
So it kind of, that seems very different from this kind of sort of loner stereotype that sort of sits around you, this guy who can just lock himself in a room and set his turbo for 6 hours.
I guess that's what I was maybe missing with football in the end, like, because it's not, like in swimming, you do start training professionally from a very young age. And in football, you sort of tend to wait until you are maybe 20, 25 or that, like in the later years. So I guess that's also why I naturally sort of switch more and more over to swimming and then triathlon, because there is just down to yourself and the work you're putting in is sort of the results you're getting out again.
Did you used to find it annoying then when you played football that perhaps you would perhaps work at this high level and you'd see other teammates who just wouldn't be
No, I think I quit it too soon. Like I quit it when I was 14 or 13 with football, and that's sort of too early to evaluate the other teammates and sort of feeling it like that. And also, I was a goalkeeper, so I think if I wanted to have a career in football, I needed to be out in the field, like using my engine. So I was sort of placed wrong in terms of my strength as well.
Well, goalkeeper's interesting because that's the loner position in football, isn't it? That's the one, like, everybody's that's like, that's out. The weird guy, yeah? Weird guy goes in goal. Like, they might be really good, but they're always like, even in professional teams, everybody goes, oh, that's the weird guy's going goal. They're the ones who like being kicked in the face, who like the pain.
I guess so, yeah. Good way to put it.
But I mean, I'm just thinking, does that potentially translates kind of into the way that you've developed this kind of attitude of an ability to train so hard? It's like kind of a similar mindset. You don't mind being the person who's a bit different, a bit out there, a bit on their own. It's not something that bothers you.
No, I think it's just been like the way I've been sort of getting out my social needs, like to be out and enjoying training and sort of dreaming in the same way. Like when you go out for a ride or run, you sort of start visualizing and sort of dreaming or into like other places and not just there by yourself, but you're like in a race mode, and it's been my way to play around.
Yeah, I mean, can you talk a little bit about like how you're obviously putting these different elements together, as you said, about when you got your road bike and things like that. How did triathlon come about as a thing, like when you realized I could put all these together, and then my goodness, actually I might be quite good at this?
I think it was never really a thing, like as a kid, because when I was young, it was like, again, like as like being a goalkeeper, it was like for the weirdos, like it wasn't really for kids. Like when I started running on the track, I did like Monday sessions with the older people in the club, and of course they were very welcoming. But then I was maybe 13, 12 years old, 14 years old, and we did like 10 by 1K on the track, and they were like, yeah, like typical triathletes in the 40s, 50s, and you had me like at 14 years old and doing the sessions together, and that was a little bit like the triathlon environment back in 2000 and early 2000 in Norway. And then you also had a few other kids, like Gustav was also doing his sort of stuff, but he came more from a cycling background, so he was training more on the other opposite side of the town. And then we had a few kids in Oslo, so it wasn't really a sport for where you came into triathlon for being social with kids at your age.
So how did you kind of, you're in this slightly different environment then, you're with a lot of probably people who, as you said, are a bit older. How did you kind of make, obviously you were very talented, that's obvious, but how did you kind of make that transition then? Like what was it, or who did you meet, or who found you at the right time to kind of move through and actually go, okay, you need to stop training just with these guys, like there's a development path for you somewhere?
Yeah, I guess it was sort of two important stages. First was as a swimmer, I feel I've always been the guy to jump in the pool first and sort of, and also finish the session last. And so I've always been trying to do the little extra, but I was still the weakest swimmer in the squad, and always like just struggling to make the qualification to get into the like the nationals or to be in the group. But I think the coaches saw that I had that sort of extra motivation and training to do what was needed. And they also saw that when we did like run sessions as part of the swim group, that I was by far like the best runner in the group. And so one day the swim coach in the group sort of advised me to try something outside of the swimming pool, like either 5K or 10K open water because of my engine, or like a triathlon, or like something outside of just being in the traditional 100 or like 1500 meter in the pool. So he gave me like a list of different races, and a local race in Os, just outside of Bergen, was one of them. And I signed up in 2008, and yeah, didn't really know what to have on. So I had like a short or like a tight down to the knees as I swam, no wetsuit because I didn't have a wetsuit. And my father was reading on the internet that it was better to have like running shoes on the bike with like the pedals you have sort of have in the spinning, on the spinning bikes. So I was riding with that on the bike, got caught probably around 10 or 15K in on the bike by another guy, but I caught him again on the run. So I think it was like around 30 guys starting that race, and I came across the finish line first. And a few months later, I was doing the Youth National Swimming Championship in like November in Bergen. And there I got contacted by a stranger. I didn't know who he was. And that ended up being Stein Gunnarsson, the father of Jürgen, who was 1 year younger than me. So he was also like in sort of my place. Like he was swimming almost full time, but he wanted to be doing triathlon. And he was starting this youth national team the following year. And he's been Googling all over the internet, and he heard that it was one guy from Bergen who had like potential as well. So then I was one of four guys to be a part of the youth national team from 2009, and he took me around for racing draft legal, because back then we didn't have any draft legal races in Norway. So yeah, he took me to some youth European Cups, and that was like when journey started and got my eyes up for like what ITU triathlon and Olympic was, and start sort of understanding that it's actually a sport.
It's so funny to step back as well when you say about the first race, because it's like, that's why most people come to triathlon, right? They don't know anything about it, and your dad's Googling like kind of almost what should you wear, what should you be doing?
Yeah. And because like I tried to Google or YouTube like some videos and see like what triathlon was, and that was like the video of the Beijing Olympics when Jan won the race, but it was just like a 2 or 3 minutes highlight video, so you don't really see much of the race itself, and also the transition is all a new thing, so you're trying to sort of pick up the tips you're finding on YouTube and internet.
So when you, going back to that first race then, when you kind of, when you were doing it, did you were talking about already there, like about how you were competing with another guy or whatever, did you feel that real competitive fire burning in you just in that, even in that first one, and did that really light something inside you?
Yeah, I've always been competitive, both like in training and also like when we did run sessions, either at school, like when you're doing like a test or like, but I remember going out of the water and start riding the bike, and I felt like pretty cool, like to be racing, not just like, I think I still had the mindset that, like, as a swimmer you try to go as fast as you can throughout the race, but it's still like cool to race in a different environment than just in a pool, like we have the lane back and forth for yourself, but like a more, yeah, a man versus man.
And then this kind of I guess surge of, you're sort of touching upon it to start with there, but this surge of like growth within Norway and this development path that's kind of, that's gone through, like how did you find yourself kind of coming into that environment? There's obviously other athletes, you mentioned Gustav already is a very notable one, and then suddenly this, because it was almost like that's almost a developing as you're going along with it. It's not like a structure that's been there for like 20 years already.
No, it started but at back end of 2008. So then first we were four guys, and then we got in one girl in 2009, and then in 2010 we had like a more trying to recruit more athletes at around our age, so we had another camp in Oslo, and that's when Gustav and also his brother came in, Mikael and Lotte as well, and the following year I think Kasper came in, so it's been, I think the good thing by being sort of such a young team is that we don't have anyone to sort of try to copy and paste, because we were sort of setting the base or like the standard ourselves in the training, and also we had our own ideas of how we wanted to achieve our goals. And when we started with the team in 2010, 2011, like we didn't have to perform just to be in Rio and to win a medal in Rio, but we had like support all the way going into Tokyo and like a long-term dream, and we were sort of working towards that and not just trying to get some results in the short term.
How important was that for you?
To have support going into...
Well, just to have a long-term vision, because like you're a day-to-day training animal, but to be able to...
I think it's important to have a long-term dream. Like, even though, like in 2012, I said like to a local newspaper that my goal was to win the Olympic Games in 8 years, and the plan was to go to Rio and get experience, and then, yeah, the next one I would win. But then I think it's important to have those dreams, so you sort of know where you want to go, but you also need like to have a sort of stairs in terms of ambitions. And so as a junior, you always try to, you want to compare yourself to the best juniors in the world. And I guess we had a very competitive junior generation with like Dorian and Jake as well. And I felt like I think it was actually in Pontevedra in 2011, when I came from being 52nd in the junior European Championship the year before to finish suddenly top nine in that race. I felt like, okay, I'm on track to become one of the best juniors in the world, and then I'm also on track to become one of the best seniors in the world.
Did you ever have a moment of doubt? Like, you sound incredibly confident from a young age, but did you ever, like, were there, like, it was a period of time where you were just like, oh, it's just not quite, the development's not happening as I kind of want it to?
I had a stress fracture in 2013 by the end of the season. So that was my last year as a junior. And so we tried to think long term, and the whole season I tried to increase my bike volume in order to be ready for the senior years and the Olympic distance. And I also tried to run more because I wanted to win the junior world championship in London. So I thought I had to do more volume on the run and change a bit on the technique on the run. And so by the end of the season, I ended up with a fracture, and it took me 9 months to come back and start running again. And of course, when you're sort of going that long without getting healthy, you sort of start asking yourself if we'll ever be healing again. But other than that, I wouldn't say I've had too many doubts.
Yeah, but you come across as very self-confident, and I guess that's part of what makes a champion as well. Do you ever feel that, like, you must stand on that start line sometimes? Do you kind of have that confidence? Do you look around at the other guys sometimes, think, yeah, I'll beat you all?
Yeah, or it depends. You can't trick yourself too much. Like, sometimes I know that I'm not in the fitness I want to. I don't feel confident in the course, and I haven't been running fast on the track sessions lately. Then it's hard to stand on the start line and sort of knowing that, okay, I'm going to beat everyone here. But of course, if the training has been good, like in Tokyo, I felt I was in the best swim, bike and run shape. I was better confident on the bike in the course than I was the year before, or in 2019. I was running super well on training, and I was also dealing very well with the heat. So then I was sort of feeling that, okay, as long as I don't crash like I did 2 years before, I'm going to win it. But then other times when you feel you haven't done the preparation or you don't feel confident in the course, it's difficult to trick yourself. But then I try to take the experience I can out of the races. And often when you're standing there on the start line, it's easy to be afraid of failing if you feel you haven't done the preparation. But then I think it's better to just look at what's important to execute and sort of look at those things and take it as a practice for the next race.
It's interesting though, because you said, like, the way you've spoken about it, like, I would imagine winning for the majority of elite athletes racing short course racing, winning the Olympic gold medal is a completely life-changing moment. That's like everything. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm getting the impression for you maybe it was less life-changing than for other people, because it was just the way you present it. And I struggle to believe this is true completely, but it's almost like, right, I've ticked that box. What's the next step on this journey?
Yeah, so I feel like it sounds strange, but like for me, it's been like the same way as winning a European Cup as a junior. Like it's a part of, like, it's like a race you want to win, and you tick it off, like, and you go to the next one. And the joy of, like sprinting away from Gordon Benson and Mark Austin in a junior cup in 2012, like the joy there and like the feeling and the adrenaline rush you're getting from that could be like the same feeling or even better than winning a world title these days. Like, so it depends on how insecure you have been in the race and if you've been able to sort of overperform compared to what you were expecting going into the race. But the biggest difference now, I would say, is that it's more people around that cares. Like before, I sort of just raced for myself, but now if I win, it means more for like sponsors, and it's,
That's interesting, because it's like a pressure shift in a way, because you suddenly go from, this is all about me, and like if things go badly, the person I'm letting down is me, and to suddenly, like, you look at all these people who are so invested in your success. Do you feel pressure sometimes? Does that ever weigh on you at all?
I think the pressure I'm putting on myself is mainly from myself. So even though I have more people around who sort of be winning, if I'm winning, I still race for myself, and and I turn up to a race because I want to win. And I think it's important that you really want it from deep, deep inside yourself. It's hard to get that external motivation because you want me to win, or like, I think you really need to have that inside drive.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because I guess that's what has to motivate everything. Like, I don't know how somebody could train as hard as you train without having that. There's no, you couldn't replace that from being a part of you.
No,
that motivation. What is it that, how, I mean, the amount that you train, the volume of your training is one of the things that kind of is a hallmark of who you are in the triathlon world. How have you come about finding the right volume that's not, that that works for you as a person?
First, I think it's important to love what you're doing. Like, 90% of the time you have to enjoy going out and doing the sessions. So actually, if you just strip it down and you do only training, sleeping and eating, then it's quite easy to train a lot and hard. Like, then it comes very naturally. So it's the more stress you're putting on the life around, the more hard it is to do this, to do the training. But I think, simply, I guess, a little bit because we didn't have any sort of ways to copy and paste when I was younger. Like, when I first started with triathlon, we had no one to sort of just do like the older athletes were doing. So I've always been training very, very high volume from even from a swimmer age, since I was doing swimming. And I think first year when I started like moving towards proper triathlon training, I got overtrained in transition from 2011 to 2012. And then I sort of realized that, okay, if I want to become best, I have to be more, take more responsibility for my own training and slow down when I need to slow down and train more when I feel I can train more. So I've for, well over a decade been sort of aware that I'm the one who also always have to, cut the session short if I feel for it.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the balance you said there, like if you strip it back to basically just training, sleeping and eating, then it's easy. But how do you, I guess, weigh as a value what other things have? Like, normal people, you must see like, they spend time with their partner, or they go out for a nice meal, or they, they go on holiday and they take a week off and things like that. Like, how do you measure the kind of value, or is there any trade-off? Like, you go, okay, I'll do a bit of this, but not that.
I don't feel like sacrificing too much. Like, I would rather look at the ups that I'm getting. Like, I can travel to Malibu and do Super League racing. Like, it's not too many at my age who can sort of have 1 week in, early this week, like in Silverstone, and before that being in Pontevedra, and then coming here to Malibu, and then back again to Europe next week. So it's I would say it's a pretty cool lifestyle to have, and try to more look at the pros I'm getting by being a athlete.
So I'm quite interested to put to you a couple of points, because we did one of these face-to-face interviews with Gustav, as you know. I'd like to talk a little bit about your relationship, but just while we're on this topic, he described it as semi-sustainable, I believe, like this kind of lifestyle, and that he felt like he could invest in it at the moment, but kind of he was quite open that I'm not sure how long like a human can sustain shutting down almost like what everybody else does at the expense of this. Is that how you feel, or do you feel completely different to that?
I see his point with semi-sustainable, but I think in terms of making it more sustainable, you have to close down more. as I said, like, in order to win races, you have to train hard. You have to train a lot. And the easiest way to do that is to close down.
Do you ever, I mean, I'm guessing it almost feels like a fruitless question, because if you're close to that point, it's very hard to have the perspective. But do you ever have a moment where you like reflect and ask? Because that's what Gustav was basically saying. He's like, yeah, there are moments when I go, kind of, I ask myself, is it actually worth it? He concludes, yes, it is worth it at the moment. But like, he admitted he has these moments where he does say, I'm not sure. Do you ever have that doubt?
I guess I've asked myself the question, but I wouldn't say I have the doubts. Like, I feel I can quit the sport whenever I want. And I do the sport because I enjoy not just the races, but like the swim, bike and running on a daily basis. So I don't feel as sacrificing in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely fair enough. Yeah. It's just how you feel. But this Norwegian, like real like high performance team you've built kind of around you now as well. The dynamic there is really interesting with your coach and with Gustav as well. Obviously, you and Gustav have become very close. You've both been incredibly successful and you've kind of gone on these journeys together to achieve this success. How do you see Gustav, like your relationship with him, how that's developed and how you view him?
I feel it's very much the same as like 10 years ago when we start training. I guess the first we like start going for training camps together, and then we try to do as much intensity workouts together at home in Bergen. So like when we did a track session or a brick session, we sort of met in the middle and did the session there together. And I guess that's also why it's easier to still be training together and sort of sharing the ups and downs, because it was something we dreamt about together like 10 years ago. And now we are sort of having won most of the races we want to win. And I know that by having him around, it makes my life and my journey easier as well. And it makes the training better. And I'm having the chance to learn from one of the best triathletes in the world. And hopefully he feels like the same, that by training together, we can sort of lift each other up, and also making the, not just the training, but like the journey more fun as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. He described his role as, I think, being a semi-punchable guy for you in training. Is that how you see him?
I'm the semi-puncher guy. No, I wouldn't say, like, of course, we need to have some times where it's like race mode. It's like we have to, you have to take off the gloves sometimes. But 99% of the time, we are trying to help each other. Like, if he's having a rough time doing a threshold sessions up on the bike up in Sierra Nevada, it's not like I'm increasing the pace just to drop him. And I might just, as long as I'm staying in my intensity zone, I'm letting him getting a sort of a free ride, even though it's very hard to get a free ride in uphill up to Sierra Nevada, just because then I know that he will get a good session and I'm getting a good session. And then the next time I'm having a tougher day, then he can sort of help me getting through my session as well. So I think we're more often trying to help each other than trying to smash each other.
And how about as like, how do you see him as like a person and a friend as well? Like not just a training colleague and racer.
I would say he's the more social guy, at least in the beginning. So he's the one who's keeping on track on the social level and what other people is doing. Well, I might be more the robotic guy in terms of the socializing stuff. But still, like, we're both very professional in terms of the training is important, and that's what we want to do. And we both are invested fully to do everything we can.
So if that's like how you kind of see yourself a little bit, you see yourself as like the robotic guy a little bit, and that's how you feel. How hard has it been to deal with some of the elements that come with success? Like, there's a lot of attention on you. There's a lot of focus on what you do. There's loads of people who want to talk about what you do and you know, say it's great or say it's awful or you know, criticize you. You have to do things like this. You have to do sponsor commitments. You have to be in front of cameras. I think if like, I imagine that's not come naturally in that case.
I think, actually, as a kid, when I was dreaming about becoming like the number one triathlete and like looking up to Javi and Ellie and like those guys as a junior, then I think I wanted to go to have that bib number one on my, like the tattoo on my arms. And I wanted to be that guy that everyone is looking at. And remember running out with Mario Mola in Yokohama in 2016, and everyone was just screaming, "Mario, Mario, Mario." I guess nobody knew my name, you know? Like, I wanted to be in that position where you're going into a race as the man to beat, and sort of that people are sort of watching over their shoulder and okay, he's probably going to be strong, and yeah, because I wanted to be in a position, I feel it comes more naturally because I want to beat her.
Yeah, so you kind of think
it's a part of the sport.
You're prepared to pay the price for success, effectively.
Yeah,
if that's what comes with it. So, in terms of this Norwegian method that's become like, you know, it's a phrase that's coined now, Norwegian method. Obviously, that's like doesn't really do it justice. But like, can you talk to us a little bit about kind of like you're obviously doing some things that are very different, that are very cutting edge, you know, and developing new technologies as well with your company as well. Like, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how things have developed in the sport and how you see them developing in the future?
Yeah, so I think like in general in Norway, we've been training a lot of high volume in endurance sport and been very focused on threshold training, even though that a lot of teams and athletes hasn't really done too much like testing. They just call it threshold training. But then when you bring in more and more testing and lactate testing and getting an understanding of what is the real threshold and being more aware of intensity control, I think that has been the key to our success in terms of being able to sustain that volume for such a long time. And also a part of the success for, or key to our success. And of course, we always want to take it one step further. And the same we've done now with the Santar Tech company and trying to work with partners in order to both help us working with them closely and getting like sensors and to get the sensors that we can use in order to do the testing we want to do. As an example, like going into Tokyo, we all knew that it would be a very, very warm and humid race, and we needed a way to get a better understanding of our core temperature. And I guess when we started like focusing on Tokyo, it wasn't really any good ways of measuring core temperature other than taking the temperature pill or putting it up from the back end. And then we came across with core body sensor, was like putting the sensor here and then working with them in order to find like a protocol for a heat prep going into Tokyo and also for other warmer races. And working with partners like that has definitely been helping us to get more knowledge that other athletes hasn't been able to get.
So like I'm really curious as to like how it makes you feel, because you work incredibly hard, you train incredibly hard. I mean, you might put yourself as the hardest trainer in the sport or right up there. You're invested in all this technology and whatever, and yet I guess maybe it's because we live in the world of endurance sports and everything that's happened in endurance sports, but still there are people who say, ah, it must be on something to be this good. Like, how does that make you feel when you hear people just sort of flippantly throw that your way?
Well, I guess it's I've heard it quite early, but especially by being like heavier build. And so I've heard it for, since I sort of started racing in the senior elite, and also especially when we took the 1-2-3 in Bermuda. And since then, I would say sort of been fading off a little bit, like the comments. I think it was more comments before. But again, as a kid, you always want to be overperforming, like that's like the races you're dreaming for doing, and like having that surprising race. So like my dream is to overperform almost, and if people are suspicious about that, then they can be, it's like you can't really prove them sort of wrong, because there's no real testing that can sort of prove your,
Do you feel a little bit sick that you have to sit here and like answer a question like that, or to be able to say, look, I'm clean, I've always been clean? Does that like annoy you that you have to do that?
Not really, because it's not too much talk about it, I would say, in triathlon. Of course, you had like a little wave when Colin...
That's what I was thinking about. That's why it was on my mind.
Yeah, really. So it hasn't been too much doping talk in triathlon. And even when you had, like, in Tokyo, you had a couple of athletes being caught both in Tokyo and also afterwards. It wasn't much talk around that even. So, yeah, I guess it's good for the sport to have more awareness around it. And it's a fight we still have to, or keep fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of like how you've built this like long-term plan around yourself, and you've managed to evolve it as time has gone on, and the timelines obviously stretch a little bit further on, how have you actually found from a theory to an execution of kind of being short, long, you know, and the way that you mix this up, how actually challenging has it been in reality, and particularly to try and get, I guess, now to get to not just being competitive at short distance, but going, well, the only reason to turn up to Paris, I've already got a gold medal. The only reason to turn up to Paris is to try and win another one. So I've not just got to be competitive, I've got to be the very, very best. But coming down from obviously racing long distance.
I think coming from short to long is something we've always been confident about. And I guess that's us to do with both the volume we have done as a kid, and we felt like we were already training like the same volume as they do in long distance, and even we did like a couple of 70.3s. Gustav won in Nice in 2019. I did some 70.3s in 17 as well, and he did his first win in 2016 in Haugesund. So we've always been like confident that, of course, we can do like half and even full distance Ironman before having done any of them. And I feel we were sort of right. but now the journey back to short distance is, of course, it's challenging. But I feel I'm within reach in terms of getting where I want to be for Paris next year. I guess I've been showing that I'm like a minute too slow on the run this year in order to fight with Alex and Hayden, especially. But I also feel I'm probably well over a minute away from my finest run shape as well. So as long as those sort of is connected, and I feel I know what I have to do over the next 10 months in order to be competitive.
So where does a long-term plan go after Paris then? Presumably, I'm guessing that you go long again.
Yep, Kona 24.
Kona, of course, but Kona 24?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like 3 months in between there. And the nice thing now is that I know the course. Like it's Queen K out, up to Javi, back again. And the same with the run, like you go a little bit into Alihi Drive and then over towards Energy Lab and back again. So know the course, know the conditions.
How are you going to manage that in terms of like from a pure like volume sense of, because I assume you've almost got to be Kona ready when you go to Paris.
No, I wouldn't. I'm not going to do any sacrificing there in order to. It's like the same with Tokyo. Like even though I signed up for an Ironman to qualify before I raced Tokyo, I didn't train anything specifically for Ironman before Tokyo, because I think if you want to win an Olympic gold medal, you have to be all in with your training for it. So I will train all in for Paris and have nothing in mind in terms of Kona. And then when I cross the finish line, it's switching bike probably the next day, and then going on to the long distance bike or KDX.
Do you, give yourself like a day to enjoy it. Why not? Do you see yourself going short again? Can you fathom doing this again for LA, or is short over after Paris, do you think?
It's hard to say. Depends on how Paris goes. If I win Paris, why not?
I can say if you win Paris, it's almost like that's the time to stop, is it?
No, no.
If you win Paris, that's the time to carry on. I don't know how that works.
Well, I think if I win Paris, it's a reason to give it another try in LA. If I do it bad in Paris, I might have to do LA in order to do it well again.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that's really, really interesting that you would even consider trying to do this again. Is there a bit of you, is there any part of you, you've said about dreaming of being number one when you were younger, having the number one, people looking at you winning the big races. Is there a bit of you, therefore, that thinks at all about your legacy, this winning legacy that you've got, the titles that you're accumulating at the moment, and potentially kind of being right there in, you know, or maybe unarguably being the greatest ever?
Of course, I want to have a resume that's hard to copy. And I guess already, or I think it's going to be very hard to copy what I did in Tokyo and then an Ironman world title within the same year in the future. And if I can do it again, it will be amazing. But again, I also race the races because I want to win more races myself.
That's great. Yeah. Christian, thank you so much for taking the time and letting us get to know you a little bit better. And we certainly wish you all the very best for Paris, for Kona, and for whatever else lays ahead for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.